The experts tell us that repetition is a sign of old age. Did you hear that? Repetition is a sign of old age, and the very fact that I've repeated it demonstrates that I'm perhaps not as young as I used to be. But repetition is not only a sign of old age, as you know, it's also an indication that something is important. And as we read our Bibles, we need to remember that, because it is often through repetition that the biblical writers make their point. For example, within Exodus chapter 1, there are several occasions when we are told of a considerable increase in Israelite population. For example, in verse 7. We read, the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly, multiplied and grew exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. Verse 12, the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. Verse 20, the people multiplied and grew very mighty. Three times throughout the chapter. Don't you get the impression that the divinely inspired historian is trying to tell you something? He's trying to make a point by repeatedly returning to the same theme. There's a population explosion amongst the people of Israel. That's the point. There's a population explosion amongst the people of Israel. And what is the point of that point? Well, don't forget, Exodus is the second book of the Bible. And as you read through the previous one, the book of Genesis, you read of God making promises to previous generations of God's people. Promises such as God's words to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, verse 2. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. Speaking again to Abraham in chapter 15, verse 5. God said, look now towards heaven and count the stars. So shall your descendants be. So we could go on throughout the book of Genesis, quoting promises which God made to Abraham, to Isaac and to Jacob. Promises concerning the vast numerical increase they would occur amongst their descendants. And the point which the author of Exodus chapter 1 is trying to make in verses 7, verses 12 and verse 20 is simply this. God has kept his word. God has been faithful in keeping those promises which he made to his people in a previous generation. And therefore, one of the great lessons, if not the great lesson, that we are meant to take from this chapter is a lesson concerning the faithfulness of God. The promises are being kept. And we learn that lesson from various angles, and we're going to look at three tonight. And the first we are going to consider is in verses 1 to 7, and there we see God's faithfulness over time. God's faithfulness over time. Now, as this book commences, the people of Israel, they're not in their own land, but they are instead in a foreign land. They're in the land of Egypt. And how did they come to be in Egypt? Well, if you're familiar with the book of Genesis, then you may remember that Jacob's sons took a dislike to one of their brothers, a young man by the name of Joseph, and in their bitter hatred of Joseph, they sold him off as a slave to some traveling Ishmaelites who made their way down to Egypt. And in the course of time, when they got to Egypt, they sold Joseph on again as a slave to one of Pharaoh's officials, a man called Potiphar. It's a long story, but over a period of time, Joseph worked his way up through the ranks of the Egyptian civil service until he became the prime minister of the country. Meanwhile, the land of Israel was experiencing a severe famine, and in their desperate search for food, Jacob sends his brothers down to Egypt, where there happened to be a plentiful supply of food. And as you know, who do they happen to meet? Who do they happen to bump into when they're down there in Egypt but their long-lost brother? And on hearing the news, Jacob himself eventually makes his way down to Egypt to be reunited with his long-lost son. That's a brief explanation of what we read in the opening verses of Exodus, where we are told these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt. Each man in his household came with him. Jacob came with Jacob, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Isaac, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan, and Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. All those were descendants of Jacob, were 70 persons, for Joseph was already in Egypt. But as you and I know from personal experience, time is never standing still. It marches on. And the weeks and the months and the years quickly pass by. We had a conversation over the meal about this, about how that the older you get, the quicker it seems to go. Time marches on, it never stands still. And it was the same back then. Now for you and I to read the biblical account from the time of Jacob and his sons going down to Egypt until these opening verses of Exodus, if you were a reasonably quick reader, you could read that probably in 20 minutes. And you might think, 20 minutes, it's nothing. But what we have to remember is that in reality, a long time had passed. By the time we get to Exodus chapter 1, a considerable number of years have passed since Jacob and his sons went to Egypt, somewhere in the region of 400 years. But what is more, many more years have passed since God made those initial promises to Abraham concerning a vast number of descendants. Considerable number of years, hundreds of years. And what has happened to those divine promises over those hundreds and hundreds of years? What has happened to God's promises over that long period of time? Have they evaporated into the mist of time? Has God forgotten his promises with the passing of time? Well, the answer to those questions is to be found in verses 6 and 7. Joseph died. And all his brothers, and all that generation, i.e. many years have passed. But the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly, multiplied and grew exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. In other words, God has been faithful in keeping his promises over that long period of time, hundreds of years. God has been faithful in keeping his promises. Well, according to verse 5, Jacob had only 70 descendants when they moved from Israel to Egypt. But with the passing of time, they are now exceedingly numerous to such an extent that the land is being filled with them. So what we see here is God's faithfulness over time. It's probably fair to say that with the passing of time, our promises and our commitments become a little bit hazy, to say the least. How many times have you made New Year promises? How many times have you made New Year's resolutions only to discover that by the end of January you've either forgotten them or you've failed to keep them? How many times have you found yourself saying to your wife or to your children or to someone else, did I really promise to do that? Don't ever remember saying anything like that. We unconsciously forget some promises we make. We deliberately forget others. And out of those that remain, we find that over a long period of time, we are unable to keep the majority of them. And the longer the time, the more unable we seem to be able to keep them. But what the opening seven verses of Exodus teaches us is that our God is not like that. He's not like that. And in spite of the years, and in spite of the decades, and in spite of even the centuries passing, our God is faithful in keeping those promises which he had previously made to his people. And so although the promises of his word that you and I now have in our hands, although the promises of his word were made at least 2,000 years ago, in the case of our New Testament, and up to as far away as 4,000 years ago, in the case of our Old Testament, you and I as the people of God can continue to believe them. And we can continue to trust them. For the simple reason that our God is a God who has demonstrated in history both his willingness and his ability to keep his promises even over long, long, long periods of time. And therefore, just as we've been able to trust them in years gone by, so we're able to trust them today. And just as we're able to trust them today, so we'll be able to trust them in years to come. Because as we've seen tonight from Exodus chapter 1, the passing of time, please note, no matter how long that time may be, no matter whether it be weeks, months, years or centuries, the passing of time does not in any way invalidate the promises of God. He is one who can and does keep his promises, even over long periods of time. I understand that this is an annual event, these anniversary services. Well, in our part of North Wales, we don't tend to have anniversary services every year like this, although next year is an exception in that as a church we celebrate our 50th anniversary. And so we did have an anniversary weekend for the 40th, and we are going to have an anniversary weekend for our 50th, but that is quite an exception. For us. But if I've understood it properly, one of the purposes of an anniversary service or weekend is to look back over the year that has passed and perhaps over the years that have passed and to testify to the faithfulness of God to us as a church. And as a church, you have found your God to be the one who is faithful in keeping his promises in the year that has passed. Well, what Exodus chapter 1 teaches us is that just as you've been able to trust in the promises of your God in the year and years that have passed so far, so you will be wholeheartedly able to trust his promises for the year and the years to come. For the simple reason that he is a God who can and does keep his word, even over long periods of time. That is what these people discovered way back then in their day, and that is what you and I will discover in our day. The faithfulness of God over time. Secondly, verses 8 to 14, and there we see God's faithfulness not only over time, but there we see God's faithfulness in trouble. God's faithfulness in trouble. Now, from what we're told in the book of Genesis, it appears that the Pharaoh of that period had an enormous amount of respect for Joseph. He had learned to trust him in a variety of situations. And so by the time we get to verse 41 of Genesis 41, we hear Pharaoh saying to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." But by the time we get to Exodus chapter 1, however, we discover that a new Pharaoh has come to power in Egypt, one whom we are told in verse 8 did not know Joseph, or perhaps better translated, he did not acknowledge Joseph. He did not recognize Joseph's past contribution to his nation's history, and consequently he didn't have any sense of commitment towards Joseph's fellow countrymen. And so in his first State of the Union address, this new Pharaoh says to the Egyptian people, he says, "Look, the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Their population is increasing to the extent that they are now a serious threat to homeland security. If ever war breaks out, we're in trouble, folks. If ever war breaks out, this vast number of Israelite people might just possibly join enemy ranks. Or they might form an insurgency, and then we will be in serious trouble. And so, folks, it's time we dealt a little bit more shrewdly with these Israelites." And so we are told in verse 11, they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens. They worked them ruthlessly, verse 13. They made their lives bitter with hard labour, verse 14. All their service in which they made them serve was with rigour. Looks like the holiday in Egypt has now come to an end for the people of God. I refer to it as a holiday, Because up until this appointment of this latest Pharaoh, the Israelites had a relatively cushy number down there in Egypt. They had plenty of food. They had royal protection. They had the favour of the local population. In some ways, what more could they ask for? But with the appointment of this new Pharaoh, all that is gone. It's gone. They are now the objects of hatred and suspicion within Egyptian society. The king on the throne is now against them rather than for them. And rather than having a plentiful supply of food as they did have, they are now going to have to slog it out on the building sites of Egypt just in order to survive. Up until now, their circumstances in Egypt have been reasonably comfortable, whereas now they were miserable to the extent that their lives have become bitter. What a change in fortunes from a life of happiness to a life of bitterness. What a change in circumstances. The contrast could hardly be greater. Which raises a question, and it is this: how is this change in circumstances going to affect those promises that God has previously made to his people? Will this sudden turn of events render those promises null and void? Will this dramatic change in circumstances bring the fulfillment of those promises into a doubt? What impact will the bitter circumstances of God's people have upon those promises which God has made to these people? Promises concerning a vast number of descendants. Now that the circumstances have changed for the worse, what is going to happen to those promises? Well, the answer to those questions is to be found in verses 11 and 12. They set taskmasters over them to afflict them. But, please note, the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. In spite of the bitter circumstances which these people are now experiencing, those promises which God has made throughout the book of Genesis continue to be fulfilled. That is God's faithfulness, even in times of trouble. Our economists tell us that one of the reasons why the economy has done so well throughout most of this year is because of two things in particular. One was the very good weather for several months during the summer, and the other thing was the success of England at the World Cup. Those two events apparently produced something of a feel-good factor in the country, and so people were more inclined to go out and spend their money. It doesn't take much to make a society feel better, does it? And likewise, it doesn't take much for a society to feel bad. And a few weeks of bad weather and a bad Brexit deal this weekend, and I'll leave you to define what a bad one is. I'm not going to get into that for sure. But that's all it will take, and the country will be back in the doldrums again. That's the way it goes for a society. Good times and bad times. And what is true of a society is also true of individual people within a society. Men and women know what it is to pass through good times in life, and then they also know what it is to pass through difficult circumstances in life. That is true of the people out there, and it's also true of you and I as the people of God. If Exodus chapter 1 teaches us anything, it teaches us that the people of God can and do pass through difficult times. All it took was for there to be a change of Pharaoh, and their lives were dramatically changed for the worse. And if Exodus chapter 1 hasn't persuaded you that life can be difficult for the people of God at times, then just carry on reading throughout your Old Testament and keep going till you get to the book of Job. You cannot read very far in either Old or New Testaments before you find the people of God in difficult circumstances, which raises a question, and that is, do we as Christian people have anything that we can cling on to when life takes a turn for the worse? view of how temperamental and how fragile our circumstances are, is there anything that we can depend upon? Well, the experience of God's people in Egypt would teach us that no matter how desperate our circumstances may become, there is something that we can depend upon, and that is the promises that God has given us in his word. We can wholeheartedly depend upon them for the simple reason that our God is not a fair weather God. He is not a God who can be relied upon in good times but not in bad times. No, what Exodus chapter 1 teaches us is that even in times of desperate trouble, our God can be relied upon. Even on those occasions when our lives have become bitter rather than happy, even in those times, the promises of our God can be wholeheartedly trusted. Because he is a God who keeps his word. He is a God who keeps his promises, even through times of trouble. We've seen God's faithfulness over time. We've seen God's faithfulness through times of trouble. Thirdly and finally, we are going to look, verses 15 to 21, we are going to look at God's faithfulness when faced with tyranny. God's faithfulness when faced with tyranny. Now, having discovered that his slave labor policy has led to an increase in Israelite population, the king of Egypt sits down and scratches his head and gives some serious thought as to how he's going to put the brakes on the Israelite baby boom. "I know what I'll do," he says to himself. "Rather than trying to deal with the problem amongst the working population on the building sites, I'll try and address the problem at source, i.e. at the maternity ward." And so we're told in verse 16 that he summons a couple of Israelite midwives and he gives them this instruction. "When you do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women and observe them on the birth stools, if it is a son, then you should kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live." You see, in the event of an insurgence, it would be the male population who would pose the greatest threat to homeland security. And therefore, by demanding the deaths of Israelite boys, Pharaoh is trying to eliminate that threat, that military threat. And what is more, by consistently and systematically eliminating these boys, the Israelite birth rate will start to drop rapidly until it eventually reaches zero. And so over a period of time, he'll solve his problem of a rising Israelite population. Now, to give credit where credit is due, Pharaoh has certainly used his brain on this occasion. But then in addition to crediting him with brain power, I think we would also have to credit him with tyrannical power. To put working men through a harsh and oppressive program on a building site is one thing, but to demand the cold-blooded deaths of babies at birth is another thing altogether. This man has made the transition from a harsh slave driver to a heartless despot, which raises a question, and it is this. How will those divine promises fare now that they are confronted with tyranny? How are they going to fare now? Well, as we've discovered in the previous section, God was able to maintain his faithfulness and keep his promises when the threat was long hours and hard graft on the construction sites. But what will happen to this romantic notion of God's faithfulness now that the threat is a ruthless and a heartless tyrant, a tyrant who also happened to be the most powerful man on the face of the earth at that time? What is going to happen to the faithfulness of your God and the promises of your God now in the face of tyranny? Well, the answer to that question is to be found in verses 17 to 20. That the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the male children alive. Therefore, verse 20, God dwelt well with the midwives and, guess what? The people multiplied and grew very mighty. Did you hear that? The people increased and became even more numerous. And so even in the face of tyrannical power, the eternal God has remained faithful to those promises which he had previously made to his people. And so what we see here is the faithfulness of God, not only over long periods of time, not only in times of trouble, but we've seen the faithfulness of God in the face of tyranny. And for many of our brothers and sisters in Christ this evening, that is a great comfort. There are millions of Christians throughout our world tonight who continue to live under the ruthless power of tyrants. Human nature hasn't changed. There are people around this world who are just as determined to eliminate the people of God as Pharaoh was back then. And you and I possibly don't have a clue what our fellow Christians experience in places such as Somalia and Syria and North Korea. For them, the faithfulness of God in the face of tyranny is so important. For those of us who live in this free, Western, civilized, democratic society, well, this truth may appear to be a little bit academic, or perhaps even irrelevant. Or is it? Did you know that this is by far the most relevant and most important of my 3 points this evening, even for those of us who belong to this Western democracy? If it were not for this truth, the truth of God's faithfulness in the face of tyranny, this church would never have come into existence in the first place, let alone have enjoyed 90 or 95 years or whatever it is of history. If it were not for this truth, the truth of God's faithfulness in the face of tyranny, you and I wouldn't be Christians this evening. And why do I say that? I say that because Pharaoh has not been the last tyrant in history to order the death of little Israelite boys. Not the last one. Several thousand years later, there was another tyrant who did a similar thing. And his name was Herod. Matthew chapter 2 tells us that Herod gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under. That is tyranny. And the reason that Herod decided to behave like a tyrant on that occasion was because he was determined to have one particular baby put to death. And as you know, and as we'll hear over the coming weeks, that baby was Jesus. And do you realize that if he had succeeded, if Herod had succeeded, all of God's promises throughout the Old Testament era, including those ones that he made to Abraham and all the other ones since then, all those promises throughout the Old Testament era would have come to nothing if Herod had succeeded. If Herod had succeeded, all of those promises concerning not only a people who would belong to God, but concerning a Savior and a Messiah and a Christ and a Deliverer and a Rescuer, all of those promises would have evaporated into thin air, and as a consequence, your salvation and mine would have been an absolute impossibility. That's what was at stake on that occasion. But praise God, the tyrant never succeeded. In spite of Herod's tyrannical determination, the little Jesus survives. He grows up. He lives a life of obedience to God. He dies as our substitute on the cross. He takes the penalty for the sins of his people. And in doing so, he fulfills all the messianic and redemptive promises of the Old Testament. Yes, even in the face of Herod's tyrannical agenda, God keeps his promises. Even in the face of tyranny, God demonstrates his faithfulness to his word and to all the promises that he made. And praise God that he did, because your salvation and mine depended upon it. That's God's faithfulness in the face of tyranny. You see it in Exodus chapter 1, and you see it in even greater form in Matthew chapter 2. And so, having looked at Exodus chapter 1, we've seen the faithfulness of our God from three different aspects. We've seen the faithfulness of God over long periods of time. We've seen the faithfulness of God in trouble. We've seen the faithfulness of God in the face of tyranny. But then, Exodus chapter 1 does not finish at verse 21. Instead, it ends with the king of Egypt going a step further, and he issues a further decree. So Pharaoh commanded all his people, we're told in verse 22, saying, every son who is born to you, that is every son of the Hebrews, every son that is born to the Hebrews, you shall cast into the river. This man's not stupid. He's seen his previous policy of genocide fail because it was in the hands of Hebrew women. And so Pharaoh's tyranny has moved up a gear, because this time he's not going to rely on those Hebrew women for the implementation of his genocide, but instead he's committing the task of killing Israelite boys into Egyptian hands this time. And so the question which arises now is this: how is the faithfulness of God and therefore the promises of God going to cope with this new set of circumstances, even more difficult than the previous one? Well, the answer to that question is not given in chapter 1. And so as this chapter comes to an end, you're left with an element of surprise. You're left with an unanswered question as to whether the promises of God will prove reliable in this new situation. And the reason it's left with that element of surprise, suspense rather, is not merely so that you'll read on into chapter 2 and see what does happen, but it's also so that you will learn to apply the lessons of chapter 1 for yourself. You see, although we are not told in chapter 1 what the outcome of this latest royal decree was, we're supposed to look back and we're supposed to say, well, if our God has demonstrated his faithfulness over time, verses 1 to 7, and if our God has demonstrated his faithfulness in trouble in verses 8 to 14, and if our God has demonstrated his faithfulness in the face of tyranny, verses 15 to 21, if all that is true, then surely we can trust our God to be faithful to his promises and to his people in this new situation, can we not? That is true of this new situation that they faced. And that is true of every new situation which you and I might face, either as a local church, corporately, or as Christian people, individually. You see, if the truth be told tonight, we don't know what the coming year is going to hold for us, do we? Yes, we're having an anniversary service in order to look back, but we also look forward. And if the truth be told, we don't know what this coming year will hold for us, either in our personal lives as believing people or in the life of our churches. But whatever circumstances may crop up in life, whatever they may be, you and I can go back to Exodus chapter 1 and we can say, well, if God was faithful to his people and kept his promises back then, if he was faithful and kept his word over time, if he was faithful and kept his word in difficult circumstances, if he was faithful and kept his word even in the face of tyranny, if that is how our God dealt with his people back then surely I can depend upon his faithfulness. And surely I can depend upon his promises. And surely I can trust him to keep his word, as he did back then. Surely I can trust him to do that in this new situation I'm facing, and in whatever other situation may crop up in the months and years to come. Is that not what we're supposed to do as the people of God? We're supposed to look back to see how God has dealt with his people in previous generations. And I'm saying tonight that a great place to look is Exodus chapter 1. And as you do so and see how God kept his word, kept his promises, was faithful to his people in those various different types of situations, then I trust that you'll be more encouraged to trust him and to trust in his promises, whatever the situation you may face, either as an individual believer or as a local church. May God help us to do so for his glory. We're going to sing in closing that well-known hymn, hymn number 106. Hymn number 106 in your hymn book. Great is thy faithfulness, O God, my Father. There is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not. Thy compassions, they fail not. As thou hast been, thou forever will be. Verse 3 reads, pardon for sin and a peace that endureth, thine own dear presence to cheer and to guide, strength for today and bright hope for tomorrow, blessings all mine with 10,000 besides. Stand and to sing.